Hello and welcome to Dinosaur Man News and Reviews. I'm Andy Hughes. I'm here with Alex Hudson.
Yeah, and I've been getting sick and tired, right? I was sick and tired of seeing our podcast drop down the charts week by week. So I'm doing something about it.
Okay.
I'm making a stand.
You're making a proactive difference.
Yeah. We're going to have to relaunch the podcast.
Oh my God.
Sorry, guys. But if you'd have supported us more and told your grandmothers about us, we wouldn't have had to do this.
We are a podcast for grandmothers, and that's what no one ever caught on to.
Well, maybe this is the problem. We weren't. Oh. But now we will be. Because I've been noticing a lot of faith-based podcasts been shooting up the charts.
Okay.
Officially relaunching now. This is episode one of the Dinosaur Man Godcast. Each week, we talk about how great God is.
Which God?
God. There's only one.
Okay, because I'm going to see how many people you alienate by.
There's only one. I'm never going to say which one, but there's only one.
What about cultures that have multiple gods?
I only believe in one of their gods.
We won't say which one.
This
is like a BuzzFeed article, and it's like, you'll never believe which god we pick.
I'm not saying that I don't believe in all gods. Mm-hmm. I'm saying I believe in one god, and I'm never going to tell you who it is.
Okay.
But he's awesome. Or she, if you want.
Well, this is interesting, because I also noticed we were falling down the charts, and I thought we were going to rebrand, but we should have had a conversation before.
Yeah.
Because, guys, I thought this was episode one of the Dinosaur Man stock cast, because I've seen a lot of marketing and...
I mean, not really a pun. Guys, I've been noticing that we've been plummeting in the charts. Not just dwindling, but plummeting. So, I'm rebranding ourselves. The Dinosaur Man Codcast? We talk about how tough it is to be a cod fisherman.
Oh, this is great, because I'm going to do an angling one called Rodcast.
Yeah, live from the North Sea. The Dinosaur Man Cod Rodcast. Look, guys, I've seen that we've been careening out of the top charts at a alarming altitude. I don't know if that makes sense. And I think now's the perfect time to rebrand. That's right, we're going to be a Superman villain-based podcast. That's right, the Dinosaur Man Zodcast.
Brilliant. So guys, if any of those podcasts take your fancy, or maybe even the original one we did, maybe put all your eggs in the five-star basket and make us get back up those charts.
I've been furious about this. I didn't want to say anything about it, but I've held my tongue for too long, and it's time they knew. And look, I want to do a podcast where we reboot again. You know what? We've been agreeing with each other recently so much that this is now the Dinosaur Man Nodcast, because we're always nodding in agreement.
I feel these are getting worse and worse. I think these got worse from the time I got involved. Now shouldn't the second one.
I only had one lined up, and then I came up with Codcast.
So guys, welcome to what is currently
the
Dinosaur Man News and Reviews, the only podcast that talks news and reviews.
And God.
And Cod.
No, God. God, that's the one I'm sticking with. Religion is going to be our saviour.
We will be talking movie news
and
movie reviews.
Of course.
What have we got to review today, Alex?
Oh, I don't know. You tell me, because you're the one who's seen things.
So we'll be reviewing Afterlife, Season 2.
Okay. Recently on Netflix.
Scoob.
Oh, you watched Scoob?
I watched Scoob.
I thought we were watching that together.
You told me you didn't want to watch it. Don't pull this one.
No, I genuinely didn't. I didn't say that at all.
You said you didn't want to watch it.
I said it looks terrible. Let's watch it.
Guys, this is awkward. Because I've done it again. And Forgiddy Forgibbly, we'll be talking When Marnie Was There.
So, you know my two favourite films of the year, Scoob and Fantasy Island, I guess, was the other one. Now I can't have those in my year-end
awards. Still watch them.
I'm not going to watch them now. Like
I'm
say,
sure
the
you
only
said you didn't want to watch Scoob.
No, I said it looks terrible, I must see it. I'm sure it'll be fine. No, it won't. Because, well, the thing is, okay, fine. We'll get onto that later.
And did you watch anything, Alex?
Yeah.
What did you watch?
No, I actually haven't. No, okay, so I've watched History of Horror, Eli Roth's History of Horror on Shudder.
Well, we'll get to that a little bit later.
I got some opinions.
Before, obviously, we get to movie news, though, and to movie reviews, first we must take a little detour down the alleyway they call gaming news.
Gaming news. Bleep, 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 bleep. Downloading. Game. Is Mixer dying even with Shroud and Ninja?
Wow.
My answer, who cares? Okay, gaming news over.
Basically, it's losing numbers.
I don't know.
Which is weird because at this point in time...
I don't read past the headlines. How long have I been doing this segment? You know I don't read past the headlines. The last week, it was I did an article on Mega Man.
You'd think, like, at this point in time, things like
Someone would have employed me as a gaming correspondent. Yeah.
Would boost numbers. Like, more people are around to watch that stuff. So you'd imagine, you know, more people at home are like, oh, I'm going to give streaming a go.
Yeah.
So those numbers would be boosted rather than actually...
Yeah, but they said the same about House Party, and now look where that is. Buried by Zoom.
Well, to be fair, a lot of stuff
Zoom really won the Digital Meeting Award.
My favourite thing is, did you see, stock market-wise, there was two companies called Zoom, and everyone invested in the wrong company, not realising they're not the ones that own the internet platform.
Yeah, they actually invested in the Tim Allen... was it Tim Allen... superhero school movie?
I don't know if it's Tim Allen.
Or is it Kurt Russell?
It might be Kurt Russell.
I need to check now, yeah, because I cannot go on living.
If you watched the stock market prices at the start of when this all happened, the Zoom that doesn't own the media platform rocketed.
It was Tim Allen, guys. Tim Allen, Courtney Cox, Chevy Chase, Spencer Breslin, Kate Mara... Like,
yes.
such a cast. What a wonderful time.
Who's in Sky High?
That would have been Kurt Russell. Sky High.
Because that's the one I was thinking. This is the content people come for.
Kurt Russell. Kelly Preston. Danielle Panabaker. Panabaker? Panabaker, that makes more... I don't know. Kevin Heffernan. DJ Daniels. DJ Daniels.
Whole bunch of nobodies.
Yeah.
Danielle Panabaker was in one of the Arrowverse, I think, wasn't she?
If you say so.
I think so. I think she might be in Flash.
Guys, next week we're going to review Sky High and Zoom. Hang on, was Sky High about the same thing?
I think so. Wasn't that a high school that was also for superheroes?
You're thinking of Zoom. Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, okay, so here's a fun thing. Is that Sky High came out in 2005. 2006, Zoom came out. It's the Paul Blart Mall Cop Observe and Report
situation. Yes, it's the Armageddon Deep Impact.
I prefer to use the Godfathers as a genre. And by that I mean the ones that won Oscars. I think next week we should review Sky High and Zoom.
You think?
Can we do that?
If you want.
Like here's a fun thing. No.
When you say here's a fun thing, I hear
no,
here's something that won't be
okay,
fun.
What would be perfect is if they'd both come out that weekend, the same weekend, because then we could do a Time Warp episode where we only report news from, like, July 2005. You know what? I'm going to find some retro news stories for us. All right? How about that? Hey, the new trailer for Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Man's Chest came out. Bill Nighy as a squid man? I don't want to give away too much of my gold for next week, so I'm holding on to the rest.
Yes.
Next week, Zoom and Sky High, guys.
In other gaming news, I've completed Nier Automata now.
How many times?
Technically 25, but actually 4, because it's got 26 endings.
Mm-hmm.
Four of them are main playthroughs, and there's like 22... like joke endings. So like, for example, there's one where it's like, oh, you're supposed to go save somebody. If you run off in the other direction, it says, oh, you abandoned your quest and humanity died, blah, 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 blah.
I see.
And there's 26 endings. I've got one left to get. And then like a couple of other achievements and I'm done.
Yeah.
And then that's it. I've done that game.
Cool. So,
really good though. Really enjoyed it.
Okay, so guys, here's my issue with
Nier Automata. Or Nier Automata.
Tomatoes. My issue with it is, I don't want to complete a game once.
But if you know when you complete a game, sometimes you complete a game and you're like, oh, I actually really enjoyed that combat.
I think we discussed this last week, didn't we? We had this discussion on the pod.
But like, if you really enjoy it, and then like, it gives you the opportunity to continue. And some games are like, oh, you can continue in this sandbox, just do what you want.
Okay.
what this has done is instead it goes continue, but there's actually a story beyond where you finished, like that you can get. So like the fourth time you play it, that is almost like any completely new chapter that you would have never seen. And I was like, okay, this is great then. Well, lots of them, like, say GTA. When you finish GTA, it's like, oh, you can go play in the sandbox and do what you want.
Sorry, there are missions on GTA? I've never done that.
You were like strip club or bust.
I operated a car paint shop but, called Stay and Spray and Go. What's it called? It'll be like a joke name, won't it? Yeah.
But yeah, so it's kind of let me continue in that game and... there are times when I've been playing it, though, and I've gone, oh, I wish this was spot out for me, you know, two playthroughs ago, because I would have really benefited from X.
Okay.
Because it's not the most user-friendly game in that way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've really
Japan's got
it.
A problem with video games. We all know that.
Shall we talk some movie news?
I guess.
Yes. What have you got for me, a little news pig?
It's been a while since since anyone called anyone a news pig on this program. I thought we'd got past childish nicknames.
Been searching for those tasty news truffles. What you got for us?
Okay, so Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who we like.
Yes.
Mostly. I don't know. Their stuff on Flash, we'll never know, I guess. Their stuff on Soloist. I think they came up with, oh, you're traveling solo. I think they came up with that one. So they have signed on as directors, I think. Is it? Yes, direct and produce.
Remember how big the deal they made out of that? You're going to find out how he got his name.
Mm-hmm. It was very bad. So they have signed on to produce and direct a new movie based on a new book by Andy Weir. Is it Andy Weir? Yeah, that's his name. Who wrote The Martian.
Is this the one that was bought before they even had a page written? They were like, yeah, we'll buy it.
Yeah, so he's doing another astronaut movie and Ryan Gosling's in it.
What's it called?
It's not called anything yet. No one knows.
So it's not the second one that he wrote because that's also been bought, hasn't it?
But that's been published already.
Yeah, so this is the third book that he's written.
So this is Unknown Astronaut Book.
Yeah.
And he will be in it. Ryan Gosling, up in space again, like he was last year, 2018, whenever it was.
The first man.
Time doesn't make any sense. So that's going to be fun, maybe.
But they want to put him actually in space, or...
Yeah, they should leave him there. okay.
But, like, so physically put him up, so basically, are they...
They said, we're going to take him to a real place beyond the pines. And they say, wink, nudge, nudge. We're sending him to space.
I've got it here. It says, then we are going to drive off.
Yeah. And then we are going to, God never forgives what we are going to do.
And then it's...
Only God forgives. Ah, you fucking idiot.
You ruined it.
God never forgives. Anyway.
I was trying to work in Punch Drunk Love.
And then we're going to half Nelson our way to... The Earth.
It's not Crazy Stupid Love. That's what I was trying to think of. Not Punch Drunk Love is Adam Sandler, yeah?
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's not important. What is important...
But basically, is it going to be a race between does Gosling or Cruise film in space first?
Well, no. Here's the thing. What's going to happen is Lord and Miller are going to leave the project and Ron Howard's going to direct it. Okay. Hey, guys. So we reported previously that Anya Taylor-Joy had a Zoom meeting or maybe house party. We don't know the full details. Maybe Skype even. Old school. MSN Messenger.
They brought it back.
Yeah. She nudged George Miller and he sent a smiley face.
And it said at the top, is listening to My Chemical Romance Black Parade.
Of course.
And it said in capital letter, lowercase letter, my heart yearns for you.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a lyric or not.
I
but
don't know.
It's fine. Well, he's also apparently met or is scoping out other options as well. Jodie Comer is the last name to be linked, who's
from
just
Killing Eve.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So the latest series of Killing Eve has just come out over here recently. Had been out in the US.
You ever seen
a couple
it?
Couple of months before? No, never seen it.
No.
Hear nothing but good things.
Yeah, I've heard it's one of those many series that I've heard really good things about, and I'm like, I'll get around to that at some point in my life, maybe.
So clearly, basically, it's just saying, well, we still want to do this. We just don't know who we want for this yet. Mm-hmm. But because that's a very decent age gap in between Anya Taylor-Joy and Jodie Comer. So it's like, this story is clearly still very loose,
yeah,
I think. So we will see. I mean, hey, who knows? Who knows if coming out the other side of this, anyone's willing to give George Miller $100 million to make a Furiosa movie. Who knows? It'll be Babe 3. Happy Pete. Happy Feet 3. Happy Pete. Different story. The other thing that we got to talk about, Colin Farrell.
Oh, Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell's been yapping. And guess what he said? He said, wah, wah. I'm the Penguin.
You had a great link.
Gotta love me.
And Colin Farrell here.
Oh, yeah. He was in
you
it.
You missed the segue. One moment.
And also, he was a Penguin.
Yeah.
Is he in it as well? Happy Feet?
I don't think so.
Robin Williams. I could do my Robin Williams segue into it. Oh, I'm Robin Williams. Hang on, that's Tom Jones. Tom, get out of here. Sorry, guys. So
well, since Tom came round.
So, yeah, I know. It's lockdown, isn't it? Hey, what are you doing at your house? Staying alert, no doubt. I see.
He's high risk.
I guess he would be, because he's, what, 80? Yeah. He's never had any breathing issues. Like, oh, no, actually, he always sounds like he's out of breath. Oh! So Colin Farrell's been talking about how the fact that his part as Penguin in The Batman is actually much smaller than most people would be led to believe, which is, I think, it's just confirming what we all presume was going to be the case, that a lot of these characters who have been announced as being in the movie are probably in it for one scene.
Yeah, might not be big parts.
We'll probably be in it for 2 minutes maximum and then move on. So... Mm-hmm. I don't know. Sorry, yeah. I froze there because I was like, this news story is not interesting enough to talk about much more than this.
No, it just confirms, like you said, exactly what people thought it'd be. And obviously, this also links in with the stuff that people are going crazy about Robert Pattinson basically saying he's not working out for this film, really, because he feels that it sets an unhealthy precedent.
Mm.
If you build yourself up to such a size... that then you have to try and maintain it, or you make people believe that's the size that you've got to be.
I think this was also done during the interview where he made dinner in front of his interviewer.
Some of the things that came out of that interview were incredible. And I see a lot of people basically being like, Robert Pattinson is this kind of person. He will just talk nonsense. Mm-hmm. Like, he's at times trolling people.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's the whole dinner thing where he...
He was opening cans of stuff, and he ended up just chucking a bunch of stuff into, like, a tin.
So, yeah, basically, he was talking about how he wants to make fast food pasta.
Yeah.
And he wants pasta to be fast food the same way that pizza is, or burgers. Yes, yeah.
But, of course, we've already established that there is a place that sort of does this already.
Well, he wanted it so you can have you can hold it in your hand, and you can just eat the pasta like that. And apparently he went to a famous restaurant in LA that serves pasta and pitched the idea.
Yeah.
And they kind of just went, this is nonsense. And apparently, I think it's GQ at the interviews with, they went and spoke to the guy, and the guy was like, yeah, everything he tells you is 100% true. Mm-hmm. He did come to us. And he's like, look, I still want to find an investor for my pasta stuff. And he's like, look, this is the kind of stuff that I want to make. And he starts making it.
Yeah.
And then puts it in a microwave, but he puts it in like aluminium in the microwave and it just explodes. But the whole story's out there somewhere, and it's crazy, and I love it.
Pasta will never be handheld. Not if I have my way. I'm protecting it. Luca Guadagnino is going to direct Scarface. Now, I've spoken with my brother about this, Paul, who is a frequent co-collaborator on the podcast. Less frequent since COVID, obviously.
Stop mentioning it.
Sorry. Less frequent than he used to be.
Yes.
That makes it sound like he's
sounds
dead.
Like he's dead.
I was speaking to him though this week, so, you know, he wasn't dead. Or either that, or I was speaking with a ghost. And he mentioned, he said, oh, didn't I hear that Michael B. Jordan was in contention for the role. Now, the last I remember...
For Scott.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got lost in the conversation about him being a ghost in Oswald.
Yeah, yeah. Michael B. Jordan was fighting with Paul to be a ghost.
You heard it here first, guys. Casper reboot with Michael B. Jordan as Casper.
Less kind of cute when it is a grown 30-something-year-old man, right? Because if you think about it, like, Casper worked because, what's his name?
It's the guy from
Final Destination, Devon Sauer. It worked because he was sort of a kid.
Do you think you could do a new
He comes back to human form and kisses Christina Ricci? Is she in that film?
Right. Yeah, it is Christina Ricci.
Yeah. And then goes back to being a ghost, yeah. I think. Like, as if, like, the one thing he needed to do before he was able to move on into the afterlife was kiss Christina Ricci. I'm very concerned about... If we go back to Casper as well next week, that'll have to be that 1996... rewind.
But the thing is, could you remake Casper now?
Yeah.
Do you think they
should? Wait, now in lockdown? No. But get me out of lockdown. Yeah, I could make a Casper movie. Casper film? Okay, so Casper 2, the Caspening.
Well, there was a Casper 2.
Oh, was there?
Yeah.
Well, who was in it? Jonathan Lipnicki, no doubt. He played all the ghosts and vampires.
Casper. There's Casper Meets Wendy. Casper, A Spirited Beginning. Steve Guttenberg was in that one.
I mean, if you're going to get... He was in the first one as well, wasn't he? Is he the dad?
Yeah, basically... Okay, so... Casper accidentally finds himself in the world of the living after failing to show up for ghost training and befriending a young boy who teaches him the way of ghosts.
So what movie is this?
This is the second Casper.
Okay. So are you saying soft reboot Casper, hard reboot Casper, hard or reboot. Remake?
We'll reboot
sequel?
It.
Okay, so reboot Casper for 21st century. Why would you not be able to do it?
I just thought maybe we should.
Oh, okay. The way you phrased the question was like, would you be able to make
basically,
it? I thought
would
you'd
be
like,
interested
oh,
in, do you think people
in
would
the
be
current
interested?
Climate, you can't make a Casper movie. Well, yeah, you can't make him come back to life and kiss a girl.
Did you not hear about the hashtag MeBoo movement?
That's the best work you've ever done on this podcast.
Tell me about Scarface. You were talking to your brother about Scarface and
yeah,
Michael
so he
B.
Said,
Jordan.
He said, oh, I thought I remember being told like, oh, or reading that Michael B. Jordan was in contention for the role. And I was like, I didn't think Diego Luna had left the project. And I went to the project's page on IMDb and it's still showing Diego Luna. And I was like, yeah, I didn't think I'd read anything about him taking over. So as far as I know, it's still Diego. I mean, I wouldn't be upset either way. I've got no particular affinity towards Diego Luna. I've got more of an affinity towards Michael B. Jordan. So
and
that's
it's
good.
A project that's been made, so he's going to be linked to it.
So, yeah, true. Much like the Casper reboot that you've been talking about. I don't know if you've heard about this. So I think, you know, Luca Guadagnino is a director. So obviously he is a director, full stop, who's had mixed results in recent years. You know, Call Me By Your Name was very good. We like that. The remake of Suspiria, less good. So do we think that... I mean...
I think that you're going to struggle to remake Scarface and it not be held up against the original, which has such a classic following.
Well, this is the thing.
How do you make that different?
So there's been people tweeting on Twitter about... Tweeting on Twitter, the only place to tweet, about the fact like, oh... You can never remake Scarface. It's remake proof. Well, Scarface is a remake of the original yes. Scarface. So it's like.
But the,
it's like. You can't say you can't remake a remake. It's like saying, oh, A Star is Born. You can never remake that. It's had four iterations
and
at
I
this
think
point.
The issue with Scarface is the iconography of that film is so ingrained in kind of modern cinema.
Yeah, sure.
Like, that it is. It's one of those that it has its thumbprint, like. So well known that if you remake it, people are either going to expect it to be like the original and be upset because it's too much like the original, or B, it's too much It's too unlike the original.
Mm.
Original I'm using in quotations because it's the remake, but the
Pacino
one.
Yeah.
You know, but so, it's either too much like it or too much not like it.
I think the important thing here is that, so once again, they've changed the setting because I believe this one's being set in LA and the previous one was set in Miami and the previous one was set in New York, as far as I remember. So it's telling the story that is a sort of timeless American story of immigrant done good and then done bad, obviously. Yeah, and I think, you know, if you can find a different way of telling that story that's still engaging, yeah, then there's nothing wrong with that. I think you'll have to do your best and know that you probably won't be able to escape the iconography of the Pacino version.
Mm.
But at the same time, you know, you shouldn't be told off for trying.
No, and absolutely. I just think that you're kind of fighting a losing battle.
But also, the benefit, obviously, is that the majority, because, yes, the legacy of the film lives on. However, I would guarantee that the majority of the people who know the references probably have never seen the film, certainly of this generation that we're living in now.
I'm not a huge fan of Scarface.
No, it's not a film that I hold in any particular.
I saw a lot of special the place bits in my about heart. It before I saw the film, and then I watched the film because my brother sat me down and was like, "You've got to see Scarface." And I sat down and watched it, and it, remember rightly, it's long, and it just didn't. It didn't do much for me.
And no neckwear at all for a film that was called Scarface. Very strange. So, you know who my favourite Scarf ace is? Bloody Porco Rosso, because he's got, you know, he's a fighter pilot ace.
But I guess this is all kind of a discussion, once again, about the value of remakes compared to why not take the same effort
and
the same story,
I'd love
put
them
it with a different title. Yeah.
I'd love them to be making an original idea and saying, hey, here's a new film that I've got an idea for. And
you can have the flavour of Scarf.
Here's some
ace.
Money for it. But they ain't going to do that. No. So, you know.
They hope to get enough bums on seats.
Studio's going to studio.
Well, they hope to get enough bums on seats just purely through name alone.
Yeah, exactly. And they will, you know. And that's why they've got superstar box office draw Diego Luna. Or maybe Michael B. Jordan.
Why don't both and they just keep changing them scene to my scene?
Again, I'm saying, interesting spin on the thing. Like, that gets you far enough away. People would stop talking about the references to the original if, you know, if that was going to happen.
If he keeps changing between Diego Luna and Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah.
Is there any more?
You know, in the original Scarface, yeah. There's a scene where he says, "Say hello to my regular size friend." So, isn't that interesting?
My regular sized acquaintance.
Yeah, he says, "Say hello to the guy I met once at a party who's taller than average."
Who's of normal size.
The last thing we have, as always. One train around up on the podcast.
You sound like somebody who really wants to put their heart into the theme song, but also can't bring themselves to do it without being embarrassed by their own action.
Well, this looks like a film for me, so everybody listen to this thing. This film is gonna be so cool.
Yeah, okay.
And I feel like I'm gonna watch a film.
Awful. Just awful.
And this looks like it's Kevin James and he is a neo-Nazi mains and he is going after a family because they've got a dog for him.
It's to do with a key, isn't it?
I don't know. I thought there was a dog.
Well, he asked for a dog to get inside the house.
But there is an actual dog.
So guys, this is the trailer for Becky.
Yeah.
Which is a film starring Kevin James, as you've never seen him before.
I would also say that this is a film that is coming out at exactly the right time if it's coming out during lockdown, because it's going to have many more eyes on it than it would normally have being released on home demand.
So this has Kevin James.
This ain't coming out in cinemas.
Johnny Funny ever. Man. Poor Blood of Our Hearts.
Uh-huh.
As a white supremacist Nazi. who seems to be hunting down a key for some reason, having come in from prison, and ends up fighting with a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds like great comedy fodder, but this is no comedy. This looks like it's a little bit more brutal than that.
Yeah, but there is going to be a scene where he tears his pants and he goes, oopsies, looks like I've got to go to Gap. I don't know.
So it's I've seen a lot of people talking about this mainly because of the fact that, oh, look, it's Kevin James, but he's not looking like Kevin James normally does. Sure. He's got a beard now.
And he's shaved his head.
But at the same time, this film just looks like Hannah meets Home Alone.
Mm. To be fair, the only thing I was thinking when I was watching Home Alone was, I was like, what if they put Hannah in this film?
And I was there just like, what if they put Nazis in this film?
And when I watched Hannah, I thought, what if they put a large cheese pizza just for me in this film? So
none of micro machines in Hannah.
This is basically answering all my prayers.
Are you going to watch this?
Why? Because you're going to watch it if not?
I feel somebody should.
I'm not going to watch this.
Oh, fine.
I'm not going to waste my time. I don't think it'll I don't think it'll be good enough.
You've heard
that it'll
it
challenge
on the podcast
for...
now that he said I can watch this one without him.
Yeah, this one you can. I guarantee if you go back to the Scoob discussion on the podcast, I probably said you could watch it on your own. But afterwards, I definitely wanted to see it.
There was another trailer as well.
Yes. Don't need to do this.
No, you don't.
Stop doing it, Andy. Everyone thinks it's me who does the theme tune, by the way.
Yeah?
It's you.
Wow. It's amazing how I go through my voice.
So, Defive Bloods is the new Netflix Spike Lee movie, or joint, that is coming out in a couple of weeks' time. 12th of June, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of, I mean, I really like the fact that he is just, you know, he's reveling the fact that it's like from Oscar winner, yes, Spike Lee. It's like, he's been waiting 25 years to say that. Like, it's about damn time. So this basically is the story of a group of soldiers who fought in the Vietnam War and who then grow up and go back to find some hidden gold that they buried when they were young and fighting there.
Mm-hmm.
And they all made a pact that they would come back and dig it up after it was all over. I'm kind of intrigued by this movie. I like a lot of the people who were in it.
Yes.
I like the premise as well. I think it could be interesting. You know, you've got a lot of time jumping going on, clearly, from mm-hmm. what you're seeing. Or at least a decent amount of flashbacks that are going to feature Chadwick Boseman extensively. Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, looks like it's one of those films, and like, I'm going to make a comparison film here that will not be flattering, but I mean it in a flattering way. I think it's going to be like the film, say, Three Kings.
Okay.
Where it's a film about...
What's wrong with that?
It's a film about gold, well, because some people didn't like Three Kings.
Who are they?
Well, you know, it's a film about search for treasure and gold that actually isn't really about the treasure or the gold.
Yeah.
It looks like it's that sort of film. Where, yes, they're going to be going back to where they buried this gold, but is it actually about that, or is it about them going back to Vietnam and what they experienced the first time they were there?
And is it about aging, and is it about companionship,
and
is it about brotherhood, and
I don't know, I've
leadership?
Literally only just seen the trailer, and that's so, enough to make me go, okay, yeah, I'm down for this.
And, you know, good people in it, Paul Walter Hauser's in it.
I like Paul Walter Hauser.
Teaming up with Spike Lee again. You've got Chadwick Boseman, you've even got Clark Peters, and Isaiah Whitlock Jr. So this is like a Wire reunion for me. I'm very excited. I'm really sort of intrigued by this. So I'm very much down to watch this. And
I hope it's a success for Netflix as well. Like, they're obviously branching out to put more of this kind of stuff out there in their originals and getting more kind of established names involved in that kind of stuff. But I kind of hope it works, because it means then we might get more of those kind of directors having their stories put in front of people's eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, it can only be a good thing if they've got someone doing some really interesting work. So, yeah. Okay.
Shall we move on?
Yeah, of course.
So where do you want to start? Do we want to start with a bit of I Don't Want Your Future? With your
we start with Giddy for Gibby, don't
we?
We
start with Giddy for Gibby. okay, guys, it's time. Get your homework books out.
It's time. Mine's got Jurassic Park 3 poster as its cover.
It's time to talk. Giddy for Ghibli.
That was my RE book, by the way, in year 7.
I used to have a Jurassic Park ring binder that I kept all my paperwork in.
Nice one.
Because I was a cool kid.
I just used to... I had an Orange County poster that I used as my... I think as my French workbook cover.
But guys, let's talk homework for this week.
I don't think we need to. So, I think we could just keep on talking about the posters that I had on my books.
Last week, we watched Princess Mononoke. And this week, you set the homework of When Marnie Was There.
Yeah, and I forgot about the homework until today. And then I told you you had to do it.
Yeah, I knew what I had to do.
But I forgot what... I've got to the point now where I forget what films I set you. I haven't even looked up one for this week, so I'm going to have to find one.
It's always there in my head. Okay. I know. So When Marnie Was There, so this is obviously a Studio Ghibli film. All about a young girl called Anna who... she's asthmatic and seems to be suffering from panic attacks, but also has crippling self-doubt at the same time, who is then sent to the countryside... basically on doctor's orders to a family friend to go and live in the fresh air for a little bit to kind of clear her mind and will kind of help her with her condition, is what they say. While there, she meets a young girl called Marnie, who is from a big townhouse, and it pulls into question of what is real and what isn't. That's it, really, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I really like this one.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. I think, strangely, I think this is probably one of the most beautifully animated ones that they've done, despite it not having much of. So when you think of Studio Ghibli, they do a lot of creature design and things like that. And
it doesn't have what you would consider signature Ghibli tropes in it that much.
The character drawing of Anna specifically, because she was the one you really focus on, it seems so well detailed and it seems like a real person.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't seem like, oh, this is something that somebody has drawn. It almost feels like she is real.
Yeah.
I think as well, character-wise, it feels like a real person. Like, the struggle she is seeing, because they talk about asthma a lot and she... And asthma for me seems like it's all just a cover for actually she's probably got social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it feels like she's a real person. The issues she has are real, which makes it much more compelling to watch.
Yeah.
So while it could easily fall into that category of being, oh, one of those Ghibli films where nothing actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's all based around something that seems like it could happen makes it a lot more believable and a lot more enjoyable. And the fact that, you know, the whole Marnie storyline, it's almost like there's two separate stories here. There's this Marnie story and then there's the story of Anna herself and what she's coping with. And the fact that the Marnie story is then woven so sweetly into her story as a coping mechanism makes it much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really beautiful film.
Mm-hmm.
And actually feels like it's doing something, even when... Because I know you say that, oh yeah, a lot of these films, they are films where nothing really happens.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as something is kind of happening,
yeah,
I'm fine with it. And this is one of those where I'm like, okay, I feel like I'm going on a journey, at least.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, even though the setting doesn't change and there's no kind of magical mystery, you know, there is mystery in here. At the same time, I feel like I'm going on a journey. Therefore, it is better than some of the ones that I don't like.
Sure.
So, yeah, I like this one.
Good. I'm glad. It's in my
really
top
scared.
Two, I think.
Like, when I put it on, I was really scared.
Mm.
Because I was just like, what if I hate this?
Yeah.
Like, if I hate this...
I told you I would hit you if you did. I made that promise on the pod last week. I made a physical threat against you.
Well, my thing was, I was there like, okay, I know that you really like this, and I've got a hit and miss rating on films that people really like, apparently, with this. So, like, I know somebody who really likes Totoro, didn't like it. I know somebody who really likes Mononoke, really liked it.
I know someone who really likes Porco Rosso, and his name is Andy Hughes.
Look, somebody's got to back that pig. So when it came to the fact that I know that this
someone's got to back... Thing is, like, I still like Porco Rosso. It's just like, you got it that high?
But yeah, when I was going into watching news, so when it first like 5 minutes of this got me, like right from the beginning, it got me. Like there's a hook there that kind of made me go, okay, yeah, I'm ready to watch this. So I was so happy that they did.
Your homework for next week is My Neighbours the Yamadas.
Okay, guys, our homework for next week is My Neighbours the
Yamadas.
The Yamadas. It sounds great.
They're all on there now, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, it should be.
Cool. I did just look up an article that I hoped I could trust, but I don't know. Okay, so cool. That's Giddy Pig Ibbly. Do you want a theme tune for that segment soon?
I think we've gotten on so far without a theme song.
Okay, I won't do it then.
Unless it's a Porco Rosso rap.
No, it's, well, one Porco Rosso on the podcast.
shall we talk... I don't want your future.
Yeah, sure. So Jack I've got... Spa. I guess I've got one thing for it, which was a series from, I think, maybe even this year. I can't remember. Last year? So Eli Roth's History of Horror on Shudder. I think I'm disappointed with Shudder. Okay. Because it's got an interesting mix of films, and that is to be applauded. There's what I would consider fewer tentpole films and a lot of sort of kind of, oh, you might have missed this because it was a very small release, or, hey, here's a sort of weird film from 1972 that you might want to check out. And that stuff, you know, I'll probably get round to at some point. But, like, in terms of its... So I've now watched two of its original... No, three of its originals, because Horror Noir, which we reviewed a couple of weeks ago, which actually was quite good.
Yes.
And then Creepshow, which was hit and miss, but has the feeling of Creepshow to it. And then this. So it's seven or eight episodes long. And it is sort of 45 to 55 minutes. Mm-hmm. And each episode focuses on a different genre or on a different thing within horror. So, for instance, there's an episode about zombies. There is an episode about vampires. There is an episode about werewolves. There is an episode about demonic possession. There is an episode about ghosts. So what this series is good at is, you know, it's talking heads. Mm-hmm. And it is trying to give you the history of sort of each of these things within the genre over the course of 100 years of cinema. So the problem you're up against there is, like, okay, well, you got to make sure that it's interesting enough. You got to make sure there's enough to talk about, and you've got to make sure that you devote enough attention to each individual thing. And for my money, I don't think it does any of those things properly, and it ends up just feeling like, oh, well, it's like a half-baked idea.
Yeah, I'll be honest, the ones I saw parts of, I was like, I kind of wish I'd talked a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so you've probably got one segment, so one segment of each episode runs maybe 6 or 7 minutes, I'd say. So there will be a segment of, I mean, like a segment of a TV series or of an individual TV episode is probably not enough time to dedicate to talking about Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
But then the problem is with zombies, it goes, okay, so Night of the Living Dead started it all, and then it goes and jumps straight forward to Shaun of the Dead and talks about how that movie was directly inspired by that. And sure, yeah, it was, and that's great. And then it jumps back, and then it talks about Dawn of the Dead, and then it talks about Day of the Dead, but in between there it talks about 28 Days Later, and you just go, there's too much jumping around. Mm-hmm. And actually what you might be better served doing is doing a feature length thing on the influence of George A. Romero and talking about the Of the Dead series and saying, right, okay, well, this was important and here is the reasons why. And everyone knows that George A. Romero is basically the godfather of the modern zombie.
Of course.
But why do you not dedicate enough time to talking about that? And as nice as it is to have the Shaun of the Dead stuff in there, does it not feel like that should be saved towards the end of the thing where you talk about, and here's the legacy of this?
And go through a bit more chronologically than actually...
Yeah, and so if you've got a TV episode where you've got 6 minutes of it is talking about the sort of parody, the zombie parody and zombie pastiche film of Shaun of the Dead, why do we not save that for its own little thing? I don't know. It just feels like... It's hindsight is 20/20, but it does feel like I kind of want to be in a position where I'm like, oh, okay, I get to really have a deep dive into this, mm-hmm. and I don't feel like I get that. So, interestingly, I would actually compare this to a series that, tangentially speaking, has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Parts Unknown, Anthony Bourdain series, yes. Right? So we've been going through that.
I love that series.
Yeah, and so here's the interesting thing, is that Bourdain will pick... So instead of doing Moroccan food, he went to Tangier.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't go, oh, well, here is Morocco as a whole country. He went to, this is one particular city within the country, and this is the legacy of its food, and this is the legacy of its culture as well. Because it's not just a food show. It's a travel show. It's a culture show. It's so many different things.
Yes.
So if you are wanting to do a deep dive into... a particular thing that gives you 45 minutes or so of proper in-depth conversation about, you know, a multitude of different aspects, but all about one particular thing, which may well be, you know, that particular area or this particular food stuff or whatever. And like, there was an episode of the Mississippi Delta that you came into, I think, about 5-10 minutes in, and that spends the whole time talking about the Mississippi Delta, not Mississippi as a state, mm-hmm. but Mississippi Delta specifically. So it kind of feels like there is a problem with the history of horror where it's a little scattergun in its approach. The talking heads, some of them are really interesting. Like, there's some really good stuff from Doug Jones.
Yes.
Who's a frequent collaborator with Guillermo del Toro, plays all of his monsters pretty much. And he talks about the fact that he in the ghost episode, he was talking about, I got a call from Guillermo del Toro, and he just says, you know, I want you to be in my new movie. And I say, yeah, go ahead. And he's talking about Crimson Peak.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, yeah, I'm going to get you to play two or three of my ghost ladies that I'm going to have in this film. And he's like, oh, okay. Weird, but, you know, fine. And he's like, when Guillermo del Toro asks you to be in your movie, you just go, I trust you with all my heart.
Yeah.
I know that this will be fantastic, so I will make this movie. And he said, you know, the same thing of Shape of Water. So there's stuff that's really interesting, like contributions from him, interesting. Jamie Lee Curtis speaks very well on slasher movies and talks about, you know, the legacy that she now carries with her for being... And she says, you know, when my mother dies, she will be... Psycho actress dies.
Hmm.
When I die, it will say Halloween actress dies. That's all. It won't say, you know, humanitarian. It won't say, you know, worked for countless different directors on loads of different things, was in True Lies. It won't say any of that. It will just say Halloween actress Jamie Lee Curtis dead.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that's the, you know, there's some really interesting insights from people who are long-time stalwarts of the industry, and, you know, Robert Englund's got some interesting stuff, but you just get to the point where you go, I'm really much more interested in the individual stories here,
and I kind of wish there was more. Like,
I'd rather watch a story. And this is the thing, is that I've watched documentaries on, like, the Friday the 13th series.
Yeah.
I've watched documentaries on Nightmare on Elm Street series. That's what I want. This feels too scattergun in a way that when Mark Gatiss did this type of series for the BBC a few years ago, maybe a decade ago at this point, I guess, he chose particular decades within horror pretty much and said, right, well, I'm going to focus on this with this episode. Mm-hmm. And that works because it tells you more about where we were at that time. And I think that's an easier way to tell the story rather than saying, zombies through the ages have changed to reflect how we feel. And it's like, yeah, no shit, I know that, But tell me about how important this film was in the grand scheme of things, and tell me about how this revolutionized things.
Yeah.
Give me an episode on Wes Craven and talk about the fact that he had five different genres that he basically created within the horror genre. So, I mean, look, it was a thing that took up my time, and some of it was interesting and some of it wasn't. So I guess maybe that's the best I'm going to be able to hope for from that.
I think the main takeaway, guys, is if you want to watch something that's really interesting, really insightful,
Parts Unknown.
Go watch Parts Unknown for Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
It has
all of Bourdain's stuff series? Is on seven series in total.
And honestly, every single episode is a delight. Anthony Bourdain was a very interesting man to begin with, but also he shows so much respect to every single thing he ever does. It's just really enjoyable to watch.
Okay, so here's the thing. Okay,
15 series of Hell's Kitchen was on Prime.
But all of Bourdain's series, I think, are now on there pretty much. Like, all of the different stuff that he did. So that's kind of good, because it means that once we get through all of Parts Unknown, we can start on the other stuff as well. So that's good. But yes, he's the perfect travel host, because he does all of the stuff. And no matter whether it's some kind of crappy street food to eat at the end of the night when you're drunk, or whether it is fine dining that costs hundreds of dollars, he's treating every single thing with the utmost respect and not taking the piss out of it, whilst also simultaneously taking the piss out of everything he doesn't like about the world, which is a lot. He's a misanthrope to a degree there. I don't know, like, okay, if you basically want a roundabout history of the horror genre, there are probably worse things to start with. So, you know, if you've got no understanding of it and you're just looking for an entry point, this is maybe a good thing, because it might spark your interest and go, oh, that really interests me. I want to find out loads more about William Friedkin's stuff. I want to find out about what The Exorcist was and what that cultural impact was. If it provokes that kind of reaction, great, because then you'll go and do the deep dive. But this is not the deep dive that I wanted it to be. And I think that's my problem. And I think, I genuinely think it's probably fine as a series.
But you wanted to think.
But I want it to be so much more in depth than it is. And I think that's unfair on it. So at the same time, I'm not going to say would not recommend. I'll say it's a that'll do pig, in the sense that I think there's definitely something for someone in here, but that someone isn't me.
Yes.
That was too long. I think we can both agree. That took ages.
It took so long to get to the point where we just said Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah. You've seen I Don't Know Your Future?
Afterlife came out fairly recently, to be fair.
So I think we can count that as proper review.
Okay, so both of mine are proper reviews then.
Okay, hit me with both of them.
So Afterlife Season 2 came out, so 24th of April it all came on. The next six episodes.
That's recent enough, yeah.
Each episode is like half hour long. So this is the second series of Ricky Gervais's Netflix show, basically, where he plays a character called Tony, whose wife passed away from cancer, and Tony then has to live with the aftermath of that, and basically with the fact that he doesn't want to live without Lisa anymore. So Tony is a very depressed man, but also has sparks of life about him, and you kind of see momentary glimpses of the man he could have been before we knew him. It is a comedy, like, despite having quite a hefty kind of idea about it. It's a drama comedy, like a black comedy. At times, this series is really hard-hitting and really emotional.
Mm-hmm.
There's David Bradley in this, who plays Tony's dad, and he is in a care home, and he's suffering from dementia. And you see, over the passing episodes, you see the fact that his memory is gone. He doesn't even recognize his own son anymore. And it seems like such a real display of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really good. There's times when you see, like, there's a moment where Gervais portrays the idea of breaking down, just being like, when you think you've got it all in control, that one trigger can set you off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done really well. On the flip side, though, there's a lot of this that is just, oh, this character is just Ricky Gervais being a character that can just say what he wants because it's Ricky Gervais, and oh, I don't like that, and I don't like these kind of people. Yeah. And hey, you believe in religion? Well, religion's a load of crap. Oh, mm-hmm. You believe in herbal medicine? Herbal medicine's a load of crap, and I've got a platform to say that now.
Yeah. Because so it feels like it's sort of outcuts from a Ricky Gervais stand-up
absolutely.
Show and it's, weaved into this drama.
It's really annoying because at times it's so well written, but the times when it's not, it does seem like everything is just a big plot to try and get him to say his next thing where he can be Ricky Gervais.
Right, like a scene is set up specifically to be...
There's a scene in the first episode of this where he goes... His brother makes him go to a yoga class.
Mm.
And the yoga instructor has a cold.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to get them to relax.
So this is in the trailer. Yeah.
And he keeps sniffing and he's like, oh, you're a big C word. Because he can say that because he's allowed to say what he wants. Like in the first series, there's a line where he's like, my superpower is I can be as mean as I want to anyone I want. And then if it all gets too much, I could just kill myself. And that's my superpower.
Does he know that that's not how superpowers work?
And it's Superman idea doesn't do that. He can be what he wants to be. And,
yeah. Yeah.
And this series is all kind of a growth of that, of being like, oh, he's actually found something in life. And there are moments of him where he's clinging on to the people around him and going, oh, I actually can use people as a support.
But it still doesn't get away from that.
But at the same time, there's so many parts of this where I'm just like, it seems like two separate people have written this.
Sure.
There are points where... So, Ricky Gervais wrote Derek as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you ever saw Derek.
Only bits and bobs. I don't think I ever watched full episodes.
Some people absolutely adored Derek. And other people slammed on it because they thought it was him punching down a man who is disabled.
Yeah.
Who has obvious mental disabilities. And people are taking this character for advantage, and is the humour coming from people are being mean to this character, or is it actually the humour is because of the person? Now, with Derek...
Or is the humour because Ricky Gervais is playing this character and it's like, oh, how risque of him.
The thing is with Derek is I really enjoy that series because I think Ricky Gervais does a really good not only performance of this character, but he does a really good way of writing this character of he has pure heart and he has pure soul.
Mm.
And actually, if you look at it from that point of view and you see the Derek is your focus and all these people around it and how they react are the way people react to people in that situation.
Mm.
And it's because of the way it's written so well that actually I think that it is really heartbreaking at times, but it is also incredibly funny.
Mm.
This is heartbreaking at times, so Afterlife is heartbreaking at times, but at times when it tries to be funny and clever, it just comes across as Ricky Gervais waving his dick around and being like, oh, look how funny I am, look at me, I'm Ricky Gervais. And it seems like Ricky Gervais, it doesn't seem like Tony.
Right.
So the moments that are heartbreaking, you can believe it, but even then... So there's a moment in here that is really, really upsetting. And the only time that I ever felt upset for Tony was the one moment where I felt that he was acting, if that makes sense. Apart from that, every other moment just seems false.
Mm.
So even when it's a sad situation, it still seems like, oh, this is Ricky Gervais playing somebody in a sad situation.
Okay.
And that's its biggest problem.
Right.
And that's the biggest flaw of this entire series, is that the character of Tony is far too close to the persona of Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
Like, David Brent was not Ricky Gervais. He was this caricature.
Yeah.
Derek was not him. It was this character. Tony is basically just Ricky Gervais.
Mm.
And that's a big problem.
So with that being said...
I think people will really enjoy it still. And I think, you know, it's obvious...
If you liked Series 1, will you like this?
Yeah. And the thing is, I did like Season 1. I still like this for what it's trying to do.
Mm.
And I think the benefit
of it is... But it's not without sin.
Yeah, exactly. The benefit of it is 6 episodes. It's 3 hours to watch all 6. Like, you could breeze through it, and that's what I did. And I think, you know, there are moments that are good, but... I think this one definitely drained a bit more for me than the first one.
Sure.
Because I could kind of see... I could see the mechanisms, so to speak. Should we move on to the final thing?
Yeah.
Scoob.
Did you give that an official rating?
What, Scoob or...
No.
Oh, yeah, that'll do. It'll do. Like, it's not bad, but it's kind of bad, but it's also kind of really good at times. So that'll do, Pig.
The negatives bring the positives
down
to that.
It's an absolute roller coaster of a scale. That'll do, Pig. Yeah.
Okay. So talk to me about Scoob.
Scoob. Scoob is basically the latest Warner Brothers animation, Scooby-Doo retelling.
Mm.
Now, if you saw the trailer and the way it's...
I did.
The way it's based on... the way it's based on IMDb, it's being talked about, is Scooby-Doo is the hero of his own story in Scoob, the first full-length theatrical animated Scooby-Doo adventure, which reveals how he and his best friend Shaggy became two of the world's most beloved crime busters.
Mm.
Now, I
think that depends on your definition of the world's most beloved crime busters.
Well, I read that because also the trailer relies heavily on the idea that this film is actually about how Scooby-Doo and Shaggy met and how they grew up together to then eventually form the Mystery Inc. Yeah, Mystery Inc. Meet the gang and all of that. If you think that's what this film is, you're going to be so disappointed after 15 minutes because it's just a Scooby-Doo film. Like, there's 15 minutes of him meeting Scooby.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is Shaggy is this kind of really lonely kid. He doesn't have any friends. He doesn't know how to approach people. He listens to podcasts on how to meet people.
Is that a podcast? Can you send me a link?
He listens to it. And Scooby is a stray dog. Who's been hunting.
Hang on, it's set now.
Yes, pretty much.
Don't like that.
If
they're not in a malt shop eating liver and onions, I'm not interested.
Scooby's this stray dog, and they happen to meet up, and it's love at first sight. Like, they fall for each other, and they become best of friends, immediately. Like, to the point where, within one day of knowing Scooby, Shaggy has brought him the iconic Scooby-Doo collar.
And do they get high?
They do not. But then they go out trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
And they bump into young Fred, Velma, and Daphne, who already all know each other.
Is Fred already a prick?
Yeah, he's dressed in their full...
Is he wearing his ascot still?
He's wearing a full knight's armour.
Okay.
Daphne is Wonder Woman and Velma is Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Oh, yeah. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right.
Of course, because...
I bet they all gave themselves a pat on the back when they came up with that idea.
And they solve a crime.
Yeah.
And that basically goes, they go, we could do more of this. Mm-hmm. And then literally the credits happen. And then they are the fully grown up Mystery Inc. team. And that's it. That's as much as you get to know about how they met. But they're now just best friends. So,
but the credits, hang on. What credits
so
happen?
The opening credits start.
I thought you meant it had like a closing credits. And then it's like, psych, we got to tell you a whole story.
But the reason I bring all this up is because the film sets itself out to be different by going, we're going to tell you the start of their adventure.
Yeah.
But you do not cover that in this film.
Mm.
You completely skip that out of the way.
Now, if you hadn't have seen the trailer, and you saw the poster, and you went, Scoob! And you sat down knowing nothing other than it's a Scooby-Doo movie.
Then maybe that wouldn't be as egregious as it is, you know. But that's fine, because other issues to get onto.
But it's perfect.
So this film...
I mean, they don't smoke any weed, but other than that, it's cool.
Firstly, the main thing you notice,
yeah,
and I don't blame him for it. So Will Forte is...
Who are you supposed to be blaming?
Will Forte plays Shaggy in this.
Yeah, I got big problems with this. Matthew Lillard is my Shaggy.
Matthew Lillard has been Shaggy since Scooby-Doo's movie, maybe even before
and,
then.
Well, in the animated version, since... was it Fred Welker who did his... No, Casey Kasem.
Yeah, because Fred Welker is Scoob.
Scoob.
Who is in Scoob. This film.
Yes, because this is his final role.
Yeah.
Because did Fred... I think Welker passed away, didn't he?
Potentially, but
he is
Scooby-Doo.
I'll look it up so we can be super sad about
that. So Will Forte... He sounds like a guy doing an impression of Matthew Lillard Scoob.
Right.
Shaggy even. And I don't blame him. I blame the people who basically didn't just go make Matthew Lillard Shaggy.
Yeah.
Like, he's already proven time and time again. The film seems desperate to impress upon you that there is a bit... So it's got a lot of jokes in it that completely miss the mark.
Yeah.
Like, that aren't funny, but there are a lot of them. And I don't think any of them are ever really funny. They have a lot of jokes for kids, but then they have a lot of ones that they put in for the adults.
Mm-hmm.
There's one point where... Dick Dastardly is the villain in this.
Okay.
And there's a point where he is trying to tell Scooby-Doo his name and ends up just shouting dick for about 2 minutes. Like, repeatedly.
Okay.
And I'm like, see. This is here for the adults to be like, because he's like, my name is Dick. And he's like, Rook. And he's like, Dick, Dick, Dick. And I'm like, okay, this apparently seems to be one for the adults.
But it's also, it's like, it's not intelligent enough for it to be for the adults. And it's basically for the kids who've heard that Dick is a swear
word. It's almost like they've gone, oh, this will be memed at some point for adults, so at least people will see the film that way.
I've just found out it's Jason Isaacs as Dick Dastardly.
Voice cast, like, yeah, some incredible people. Zac Efron is Fred.
Yeah.
Anna, no, what's
Amanda
her name?
Amanda Seyfried
is Daphne. Mm-hmm.
Gina Rodriguez, yes. Velma.
Then obviously Will Forte. You've got Tracy Morgan in here.
Tracy Morgan as Captain Caveman. Yeah. Oh, my God.
So, which brings me on to one of the big
Simon
problems.
Cowell.
So, this film seems like it was
Am I supposed to not say Simon Cowell, by the way?
It was written 4 years ago, I'm sure. Because so many of the references are so out of date.
Animation takes a long time.
There's references to millennials. There's references to toxic masculinity. There's Simon Cowell as, like, a major cameo in this. Mm. It's almost like it's written out of date. It seems desperate to build this Hanna-Barbera universe rather than focusing on itself.
Okay.
So there are a lot of references to, like, there's a reference to Hong Kong Phooey, for example.
Okay.
There's references to other Hanna-Barbera characters in this that are there in your face going, oh, actually, if you'd focus more on Scooby-Doo, I'd be more interested, because this isn't a Scooby-Doo adventure.
But does it not feel like one of those Scooby-Doo, the old Scooby-Doo films where they mixed and matched between the Hanna-Barbera, like where they encountered other Hanna-Barbera?
But it's too jarring in this. There's too much of it.
Okay. So, like,
there's so much of it.
Because they were some of my favourite things when I was growing up.
So much of this film is spent not with Mystery Inc.
Okay.
Like, so Shaggy and Scooby are off in a different place. Mm-hmm. But Mystery Inc. are still involved in doing whatever they want to do.
Right.
There's a point in this film where Shaggy says to Scooby, what the hell is going on? And I couldn't help but agree with him.
Right.
I had no idea. Like, it's just too messy as a plot. Like, the plot of Scooby-Doo is haunted place, chased by monster, tracked, stopped monster using smarts, pulled his mask off, oh, it's Old Man Withers.
Yeah.
That's Scooby-Doo. It's,
sometimes it wasn't.
It's such a simple formula. But when you start messing with it and trying to be too smart with it, actually it becomes too messy.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with this film. It is an absolute mess. Like, it's trying to market itself as a kid's film, but also I don't know whether kids would enjoy it. And the main thing and the biggest problem with this film is it's ugly.
Okay.
It's just an ugly film. Like, so it's all 3D rendered. Like, it's 3D graphics. And I don't know why it is. Like, I understand that obviously there is a lot of, you know, you can, so why not? But actually, the credits of this film, like the final credits, are kind of like this layered 2D effect. And it's the most beautiful the film looks.
Yeah.
Like, it looks, I'm there going, why is the film not this? Because the 3D effect is just ugly to see.
Yeah.
Like, everything just looks like it's too smooth or too bulbous. And I was like, I think this film is actually just not nice to look at.
Yeah.
And I think that's his biggest problem. So realistically, if you want something for the kids, there is, yes, you can get this for them and sit down, and I'm sure you would get an hour and 45 minutes worth of piece out of them.
But there are other animated films that are available.
They deserve your attention better, like, go get Into the Spider-Verse. It's much more interesting as a film.
Go watch Ghibli films.
They're all on Netflix, yeah. Put Porco Rosso on. Teach us some terrible values.
Yeah, start with Totoro. How about that?
But, you know, I just think that they've tried to reinvent the wheel on something that actually has a formula that has already been proven to work. And they've changed so much about it that the stuff that does work normally doesn't.
I've got a theory about Scooby-Doo.
Yes.
Is that I think it really only works properly in its original format. Because the early 2000s stuff the live action movies mm-hmm. were very much their own thing and didn't feel like Scooby-Doo stuff.
Yeah.
And as good as Matthew Lillard is in that film, which I think he is very good. And I think if you're not going to have Casey Kasem, you have Matthew Lillard because he's doing a very good job of it. And the problem I have with it is that it feels like this is taking something that is... It feels too cartoony to be transposed onto real life people. Mm-hmm. And I think I feel the same way about a 3D animation version as well, in that it doesn't have the same issues as, oh, it's a real life person. But because you're moving it away from being that flat animation mm-hmm. to being a 3D animation instead, I've got big sort of logic issues where I'm like, I have to make such a leap to get there. And maybe if you've never seen a Scooby-Doo thing before.
Maybe, but even it looks just weird. Like, so they try and do like the hang a lantern on certain things that they do in all Scooby-Doos. So mm-hmm. like there's reference to kind of, oh, Shaggy's written like how adults feel, teenagers speak.
Yeah.
And then there's the bit where Noho and they run through doorways mm-hmm. and like the things like that. They show that on screen and it looks weird. It yeah. doesn't work in 3D. Like mm-hmm. it seems to be a gag that only really worked in 2D.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest problem with it. Like, I think I could forgive some of its flaws if at least it looked nice.
Mm.
And actually it just looks ugly.
Okay.
And that's obviously somebody's design choice along the way. And there is concept art out there of this in 2D. But somebody along the way has said, oh no, we're going to go 3D with this.
Yeah.
And I think that's its biggest mistake.
So, all that said,
I wouldn't recommend it at all.
I thought it was just going to be a surprise. Yeah, go watch
it. I just think it's really poorly executed.
Okay. That's it. No more.
No more.
That's it for this week. Next week, Zoom and Sky High. we'll bring you thoughts on both of those. We are going to do that now.
The 2006
special. 2005-06
special.
I mean, the problem is one of them came out in 2006. It kind of ruins it all. But yeah,
as
always, guys, you can find us on Facebook, iTunes, Buzzsprout, Spotify, not SoundCloud, the other
Stitcher.
One. Stitcher. Dinosaur Man everywhere. Dinosaur Man 15 on Twitter.
Yes.
John Neves did the theme song this time. It was also Scooby Dooby Doo. Where are you? We got some work to do now. One trailer roundup on the podcast. On the podcast. On the
no,
podcast.
No, it isn't.
All of the musical references in this episode. You hosted.
I did, and you also hosted.
I guess.
And guys,
I didn't do a lot of the heavy lifting this week.
Thank you for joining us. I realise we spoke a lot this week, but thank you for joining us as ever.
They didn't notice the length.
Guys, until next
week. They got longer commutes to do. They got longer commutes. Stay alert.
Stay safe.
Next time. Stay alert, stay safe, stay Scoob.
Stay Scoob.
100% Scoob 100% of the time. Bye, guys.
Next week, we review Scooby-Doo 1 and 2.
I mean, we could. It doesn't fit into the timeline, but we could. Okay, next week, Zoom and Sky High. Wouldn't that be good? We have a battle.
Until next time, Sky Bye.